I just had dinner with some of the students, and, you know, they brought that up. They started talking about, you know, about the liberal media, which doesn't exist. And, you know, well, okay, this is liberal media. This is, let me talk about this for a second, because this is really important. It's part of the story. Okay, you have, I mean, this is what Joseph Goebbels used to call the big lie. If you just keep on saying it again and again, people begin to believe, you know, okay, yeah, there is a liberal media out there. But the liberal media, that would be The Nation magazine and Mother Jones, maybe Rolling Stone, Air America Radio, Pacifica Radio, and that's pretty much it. You know, but you have a right-wing media, and if you look at where Americans are disproportionately getting their news, that's where it's coming from. According to Pew, which just did a survey, 30% of Americans now say their principal news source is talk radio, which is 90% controlled by the right. 22% say cable news, mainly Fox News, which, you know, 10% say Sinclair Network, which is the largest television network in America. It is run by a former pornographer who requires all 75 of his local affiliate stations to take a pledge that they will not report critically about this president or about the war in Iraq or about a number of other issues. And then the rest of us get our news from the traditional corporate-owned media, ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN, which have no ideology except for their own pocketbook. And that ideology is dictated invariably or is coterminous with the ideology of the party in power. And you know, because there are all these huge conglomerates that have hundreds of subsidiaries that are doing deals with the government, and they all want these consolidations that are dependent on government licensing. And particularly with the Republican Party, which is in favor of all these consolidations even more than the Democrats. And, you know, if you look at the media, look at the, you know, see if you, you know, when you look at the media and see that electronic media, and see if you can find a liberal voice on it. See if you can find the liberal equivalent of a Glenn Beck anywhere on the liberal media, okay? Or a John Stossel, or a Britt Hume, or a Neil Cavuto, or a Bill O'Reilly, or a Sean Hannity. They just don't exist. Okay, you have Alan Combs, but, you know, that's like the Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals. His job is just to lose every argument and kind of look unattractive while he's doing it. And, you know, this all started, this devolution of the American media began in 1988 when Ronald Reagan abolished the Fairness Doctrine. We had a law in this country called the Fairness Doctrine, which was passed in 1928 at the dawn of commercial radio. And what it said was that the airwaves belong to the public. If you own a newspaper, you can write anything you want. That's freedom of the press. But if you're using the airwaves, they belong to us. And you have to use them responsibly. And specifically, you have to use them to promote the public interest and to advance American democracy. Those are the two requirements. There were three specific requirements under the Fairness Doctrine. Number one, they had to tell us news of public import. That's why there's a 6 o'clock news hour. The networks didn't want that. They want to put entertainment in that slot because that's where they make money, and the news departments traditionally were money losers. They had to do that, and that's why the radio stations, even the music stations, periodically update us on the news. That's all artifacts of the Fairness Doctrine. They had to do that as a condition of their license. Number two, and, you know, they had to tell news of public import. That does not mean Anna Nicole Smith, you know, for 3 weeks in a row. It means news issues that are critical for us making rational decisions in a democracy. You couldn't slip entertainment or celebrity gossip into that slot. You had to do real news, or they could lose their license, and that meant they'd lose the whole network, the whole station. They were scared of that, so they did put real news, and they put responsible people running their news, you know, the news outlets. Number two, if they're going to give opinion, they had to tell both sides. You couldn't have had a Rush Limbaugh under the Fairness Doctrine. You couldn't have had a Fox News under the Fairness Doctrine. You could have had a Rush Limbaugh, but, you know, for 4 hours, but then you would have had to put a countervailing voice for 4 hours. You couldn't have had, you know, Rush and his ditto heads for 24 hours a day on the same station. And Rush Limbaugh got started in 1988, the year that Reagan abolished the Fairness Doctrine. He couldn't have gotten started without it. Number three, they had to have local control and diversity of control. You couldn't have corporate consolidation of the news media. And Congress strengthened that part of the Fairness Doctrine, that provision, in 1949, after World War II, because they saw what Hitler had done in Europe, which was to use these licensing agreements and corporate consolidations to get control of the radio networks, of the airwaves, and suppress criticism of his chancellorship and later on his regime. And they said, we can't let that happen here. We got to make sure that there's lots and lots of different competing voices and that their job is going to be criticize people in power, because that's how a democracy works. They wanted to make sure people in Kansas could get crop reports. And, you know, and people in Ohio could get tornado warnings. And people in the South could get country music. And you wouldn't have, you know, programming and content dictated by a couple of corporate epicenters in remote parts of the country. And Congress abolished the Fairness Doctrine in 1988 as a favor to the Christian right, which was already plotting the takeover of talk radio and of AM radio, and as a favor to the big studio heads who had helped Reagan get elected, who were plotting the takeover of all media. And today, as a result of that, we have five giant multinational corporations that control all 14,000 radio stations in America, all 2,200 television stations in America, all of our billboards, 80% of our newspapers, and most of the large internet content providers. So there's five guys who are deciding what Americans hear as news, what information gets to us. And the news departments have become corporate profit centers. They no longer, where they used to be expected to lose money and do the job that was their licensing, they now are expected to make money for the corporation. And so what have they done to do that? They've gotten rid of their investigative reporters. They've cut costs. They got rid of their investigative reporters. These were the 80% of investigative reporters have lost their jobs over the past 15 years. These are the people who could connect the dots between the money that was given to the president by the big polluters and the fact that and the asthmatic kids in this country. You know, the explosion of asthma. And most people, when they see an asthmatic kid, are not saying, you know, they are not pointing their finger at the White House. And fishermen who go in and who can no longer safely fish in the state of Ohio and eat the fish because they're all contaminated with mercury. Why is that? It was all supposed to have been cleaned up. The reason it wasn't was because of the money that was given by the mercury producers to the Bush administration. But nobody, the fishermen in this state, probably 80% of them vote Republican. And they have no clue when they get these fishery, you know, I buy my fishing license for $30 every year. And I look at the fishery advisory that comes with it, which is now about that thick in New York State, and it says all the places where you can't eat the fish, which is virtually 95% of the waterways in New York State. And I'm reading through this thing, and I'm saying, this son of a bitch George Bush when I read it. But, you know, the average fisherman never makes that connection. And he goes back into the voting booth and pulls the lever for Bush again, because he doesn't understand, because the investigative reporters are gone. The people who are supposed to be giving him that information no longer exist. And they got rid of their foreign news bureaus. When I was a boy, ABC had 47 foreign news bureaus in Europe. Okay? Today they have none. They just buy their news in the can from me. And so Americans, the only way you can get foreign news in this country is if you go to BBC. And Americans have no clue. You know, we're supposed to be the leaders of the free world. We have no clue what's happening in the free world, and that, or any place in the world. And that's why, you know, we accepted this neocon fantasy that we were going to be, you know, greeted with flowers in the streets when we went into Iraq and into a 1,200-year-old fist fight in Iraq. People in Canada didn't believe that. People in Europe didn't, because they understood the background of these cultural backdrops in these countries that are nuanced and they're complex and they don't fit into the simple framework of a bumper sticker. And, you know, we didn't understand that in this country. And so we walked into this $1.5 trillion mess that's cost us now, you know, thousands and thousands of lives as the best people in our country. And because we don't know, and they also, because they're corporate profit centers, and they no longer have an obligation to promote the public interest. Their only obligation is to their shareholders. Well, how do they serve that obligation? Not by telling us the really complex and difficult issues and explaining to us about what happens, what really happens when you privatize Social Security, who really gets rich and who really gets poor from that. What happens when you turn Medicaid over to the pharmaceutical industry? You know, what happens when you let the credit card companies write the bankruptcy policies for our country? You know, what happens when you turn the mortgages over to the banks? You know, all of this stuff. And what happens with global warming? Americans are totally clueless about any of these issues because the networks aren't explaining this stuff to us. And we get, you know, 60% of us still get our news from the networks. And they're not explaining this anymore because the obligation has been removed. And instead of telling us about those things, they are looking for just to expand viewership, which means greater profits. Well, how do you expand viewership? Not by delving into those difficult issues, but by entertaining us, by appealing to the lowest common denominator, the prurient interest that all of us have in the reptilian core of our brains for sex and celebrity gossip. So, you know, they give us Michael Jackson and Lacey Peterson and Anna Nicole Smith and, you know, Kobe Bryant and, you know, Brad and Jen and Brad and J-Lo and Brad and Angelina. And, and you know, we know more about Tom Cruise and Kate than we do about global warming. And Americans today are the best entertained and least informed people on the face of the earth. And that's a real problem. That's a real problem for American democracy, because you cannot have democracy very long if you do not have an informed public. And, you know, Thomas Jefferson said, an uninformed public will trade 100 years of hard-fought civil rights for a half an hour of welfare, you know, to the first demagogue or tyrant or religious fanatic who comes along and promises them a $300 tax break. They'll tear up the Bill of Rights. You know, he didn't say that the second part, but that's what he was talking about. And, you know, Jefferson at the time that he said that was in a battle with Hamilton, Madison, and Adams over, Jefferson was the biggest small D Democrat. He wanted the universal franchise. He thought everybody should be able to vote. But Hamilton, Madison, Adams said, no, the vote should be restricted to the landed gentry. And it wasn't because they were snobs or less democratic. It was because they believed that only the educated classes would have the fortitude to fight for and stand up for our Bill of Rights and make the sacrifices that were necessary to protect our constitutional rights. And that the vast mass of people wouldn't understand the implications to themselves, their children, and would give away those rights for, you know, to a demagogue or for a quick welfare program. And Jefferson agreed with them. He said, you're right. The uninformed public will give away our rights. But he said, the remedy for that is not to deprive the public of their rights, but rather to forcibly inform them, whether they want to be informed or not. So the original 13 colonies did something that had never been done before in the history of the planet, which was to have mandatory public education so that you could be arrested if you were uninformed and uneducated, and that people were forced to educate their children. And, you know, Jefferson built the University of Virginia and all these educational institutions in every county in the state because they believed that if you were uninformed and uneducated, you were a threat to all of us. You were a threat to American democracy, and that our country could not survive if you did not inform the public. And then in 1928, when commercial radio was invented, Congress immediately, Republicans and Democrats, recognized that this was the way that the public was going to get its information. They said, we cannot allow it to fall into the hands of profit-making corporations who will consolidate, make deals, sweetheart deals with public officials to keep them in power, and then increase their profits and power at the expense of the rights of all of our countrymen. And so they said, this has to serve the public. It's the public airwaves. It has to serve the public. It has to serve our democracy. And they made rules for doing that. Well, Reagan abolished those rules. And as a result of that, today, you know, we have an uninformed public in our country. And, you know, I've been going around for like more than 20 years doing talks to people, you know, of this kind. But I do about 20, sometimes 30 speeches a year in red states to Republican audience. I mean, hardcore Republican audience, like, you know, people in Kansas, everybody wearing a cowboy hat in the audience. And I get the same reaction, positive reaction from those audiences that I do from liberal college kids on the East Coast or California. And the only difference is that the Republicans come up to me afterwards and say, you know, how come I never heard this before? And I'm like, it's because you're getting news from Rush and from Fox News. And Sinclair Network, which is, you know, is predominant in the red states. And, you know, I came to this conclusion many, many years ago. I never really said anything to anybody about it, but I said that, you know, that the values were the same, and all these pundits on TV were saying, you know, talking about the red states versus the blue states, and that the red states have a monopoly on morality, and that the blue states are dissolute, degenerate, and disparate, and everything. That there really wasn't that values difference between, you know, the red states and the blue states. It was really an informational deficit. And that, you know, 80% of Republicans were just Democrats who didn't know what's going on. But the values are the same. And then, you know, in 2004, there was this survey that came out called the PIPA Report by the Public Policy Institute at the University of Maryland. And that report said, it confirmed my own anecdotal observation about what was going on, because what they did was, the PIPA report went and surveyed people who had voted in the 2004 election about, based upon their party affiliation and their knowledge of current events. And what they found was that the people who said they voted for George Bush had this huge deficit, information deficit. They had huge misapprehensions about what was going on in current events. For example, 70% of the people who voted for Bush said that they believed Saddam Hussein had bombed the World Trade Center. 70% said that they believed that weapons of mass destruction have been found in Iraq. 64% said that they believed that that President Bush strongly supported the Kyoto Protocol and strong labor and environmental standards in our international treaties, which was untrue. And somewhere like 65% said that they believed that the American invasion of Iraq was strongly supported by Iraq's Muslim neighbors and among our traditional allies in Europe, which also was untrue. And PIPA then went back again twice to the same people and to determine, number one, where the bad information was coming from. Invariably, the people who had this misinformation said that their primary news source was Fox News or talk radio. And, you know, you may say, this is impossible. People could not be this badly misinformed. But Zogby, which is the biggest polling outfit in this country, this summer polled U.S. military personnel in Iraq and found that over 80%, go look at the numbers tonight, because I think it's 85% of military personnel currently serving in Iraq, America, U.S. military personnel, believe that we are in Iraq to punish Saddam Hussein for bombing the World Trade Center. So, you know, this misinformation has percolated and permeated through the American culture without many people understanding how pervasive it is. They went back a third time to the same people to find out what their fundamental values were. And it did that by posing a series of hypotheticals. For example, they said, what if there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? What if Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with bombing the World Trade Center? What if the American invasion of Iraq was mainly opposed on the Muslim street and among our traditional allies in Europe? Should we have gone in? 84% of Democrats and 84% of Republicans said the same thing. No, we shouldn't. So the values were identical. It was only the information that was that caused people to make different decisions. That's why it's so important to have a functioning press in a democracy. Because, you know, our system will work, but it's not going to work if people are badly misinformed.